Hi, I'm Cleo, and this is the podcast in which I use my PhD in English to interpret the songs of Taylor Swift. Welcome to Studies in Taylor Swift, Episode 3, Taylor Swift and Thing Theory. Before we begin, I want to add something to our discussion of the meaning of Juliet's claim, "I was a scarlet letter," at the end of the last episode. I mentioned that this comes up in the song New Romantics, where Taylor's speaker says, "We show off our different scarlet letters. Trust me, mine is better." As Taylor says later in that song, life is just a classroom, and the scarlet letter is, among other things, a letter grade. The scarlet letter in Hawthorne's novel is a capital A for adultery, and Taylor's song draws a connection between that letter and the grade A, the highest grade in the American system. This is the same connection that is made punningly apparent in the title of the 2010 teen movie retelling of the scarlet letter, Easy A. In New Romantics, that A is also an ace, a playing card with a red A on it. Taylor says, "It's poker, you can't see it in my face, but I'm about to play my ace." Being branded with an A is thus a confirmation of Taylor's excellence, a sign of her luck and winning strategy, and a mark of being an outcast from society. It's a punishment for being extraordinary, for extraordinary success. That's why she says we show off our different scarlet letters. This is at once the comparison of graded papers and the moment when you reveal your cards in a card game. In the context of Love Story, bringing the mention of a scarlet letter into a song that's mostly a reworking of Romeo and Juliet points to the canon of American high school English. Romeo and Juliet and the scarlet letter are frequently read in American high school English classes, and also promises that the song represents successful academic engagement with Shakespeare. Taylor gives herself an A. Also in relation to the last episode, I have a favor to ask. My friend Clara listened to episode 2 and wrote that if we understand Love Story to be about an unplanned pregnancy, it's a love story baby instead of a love story, comma, baby. She thinks this is funny and insisted that I include it in the next episode, so write in and let me know if you agree. In this episode, I want to talk about another song about being young. We're taking on Cardigan in this episode, putting it on and saying it's our favorite. So, as usual, I'm going to read the lyrics to our main song, in this case Cardigan, out loud, and then we're going to dive in and do some close reading. Cardigan by Taylor Swift. Vintage tea, brand new phone, high heels on cobblestones. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. Sequin smile, black lipstick, sensual politics. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. But I knew you. Dancing in your Levi's, drunk under a streetlight, I knew you. Hand under my sweatshirt, baby, kiss it better, I... And when I felt like I was an old cardigan under someone's bed, you put me on and said I was your favorite. A friend to all is a friend to none. Chase two girls, lose the one. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. But I knew you, playing hide and seek and giving me your weekends. I knew you, your heart beat on the high line once in 20 lifetimes, I... And when I felt like I was an old cardigan under someone's bed, you put me on and said I was your favorite. To kiss in cars and downtown bars was all we needed. You drew stars around my scars, but now I'm bleeding. 'Cause I knew you, stepping on the last train, marked me like a blood stain. I knew you, tried to change the ending, Peter losing Wendy. I knew you, leaving like a father, running like water. And when you are young, they assume you know nothing. But I knew you'd linger like a tattoo kiss. I knew you'd haunt all of my what-ifs. The smell of smoke would hang around this long, 'cause I knew everything when I was young. I knew I'd curse you for the longest time, chasing shadows in the grocery line. I knew you'd miss me once the thrill expired, and you'd be standing in my front porch light, and I knew you'd come back to me. You'd come back to me, and you'd come back to me, and you'd come back. And when I felt like I was an old cardigan under someone's bed, you put me on and said I was your favorite. Taylor often sings about objects of clothing, the scarf in All Too Well, the white t-shirt and tight little skirt in Style, and of course the dress in Dress. These items of clothing are often mementos of particular relationships or stylistic choices that also stand for the choice of a romantic partner. Clothing is about many things: comfort, coolness, glamour, timelessness, timeliness, and it promises a certain amount of control over one's presentation, how one is perceived. In Style, the speaker says, "You've got that long hair, slick back white t-shirt, and I got that good girl faith and a tight little skirt." Connecting her faith and her skirt in this unstable alliance, she's the good girl who has faith in men and who dresses in constricting clothing to impress them, or does she have faith in herself and her own body and how it looks in a tight skirt? What do faith and tight skirts have to do with each other? And for that matter, what do they have to do with being a good girl? This is a micro commentary on contemporary womanhood that interestingly interestingly, Taylor has actually addressed before. The speaker of You Belong With Me contrasts herself and her romantic rival by saying, "She wears short skirts, I wear t-shirts." In that song, she's the girl who doesn't wear tight skirts, who dresses like the guy in style. This points to Taylor's constant reinvention of herself and her look. In the music video to You Belong With Me, Taylor of course plays both women, at once the popular mean girl and the nerdy girl on the sidelines. Taylor's own mutability, rather than her desire for the boy, becomes the true topic of that music video. The question is not so much whether he belongs with her as which version of herself she wants to be. The speaker of Dress has a, quote, flashback to when you met me, your buzz cut and my hair bleached. A wink to so-called Bleachella, Taylor's least successful hairstyle that she reminds us did not stand in the way of her romantic prospects. Even in my worst time, she says, you could see the best of me. These lyrics reflect on the ways in which dress choices define eras that are also relationships to herself and other people that are also musical styles. And crucially, to think of clothing and hair as constituting or expressing identity is to think of identity as inherently mutable. You can be the girl in the tight skirt one day and the girl in the t-shirt the next, or for that matter, the boy in the t-shirt. These items of clothing function in some ways as objective correlatives, which, as the poet and critic T.S. Eliot defines the term, are a set of objects, a situation, a chain of events, which shall be the formula of a particular emotion, such that when the external facts are given, the emotion is immediately evoked. Taylor's songs teem with external facts that evoke entire relationships, minor specificities that capture how it felt to be in a particular time and place. In style, the relationship actually almost feels secondary to these stylistic choices, reimagining the idea of true or constant love as instead a kind of timeless style that is continually in fashion. When we go crashing down, we come back every time, because we never go out of style. You could say style is not in fact about the real relationship between Harry Styles and Taylor Swift that it alludes to, or the fictional relationship the song glances at between James Dean and Natalie Wood in Rebel Without a Cause, but the idea, the concept of such a relationship, the way in which it captures the popular imagination. Two casually dressed, classically beautiful young people in a fast car. It could end in burning flames or paradise because they come back every time. They never go out of style. While Taylor may say in the eternal classic, Better Than Revenge, that, quote, no amount of vintage dresses gives you dignity, it's not quite dignity that vintage dress ownership grants you. Rather, it allows you to play with the past and its eras, to position yourself in relation to history, your own history, the history of style. And for Taylor, the recycling of clothes recurs as a way for her to understand her own career and her constant reinvention of herself. In the lyrics to Willow, she writes, they count me out time and time again, but I come back, stronger than a 90s trend. Here is in style, the cyclical nature of fashion, the way that it keeps coming back, has an almost salvific appeal, promising that after the fall, after you fall out of favor, you'll come back, and young people will still think you're cool. The idea of recapturing the past through clothing comes back in Cardigan, where the speaker, imagined as an old cardigan under a bed, says, I knew you'd come back to me. The cardigan knows its wearer will come back, just as the tight dress and t-shirt and style promise that their wearers will come back. What is it about clothing that promises a way out of mistakes, a return to a lost state? Well, I'm glad you asked. I think this has something to do specifically with a millennial longing to be at once vintage and cutting edge. In Cardigan, as in style, we get a relationship defined by externals. Vintage tee, brand new phone, high heels, black lipstick, your Levi's, my sweatshirt. The move between vintage tee and brand new phone captures an aesthetic, the conjunction of shiny new technology and a certain performative nostalgia for the past that feels distinctly millennial. The first line already announces the idea of a temporal chasm hiding within certain objects of clothing. A vintage tee is an old shirt that retains its value despite its age, or rather, because of its age. The vintage shirt and the old cardigan are what the scholar of early modern literature Jonathan Gill Harris might call untimely matter, an object that is temporally hybrid with attachments both to the past and present. Harris writes, quote, within the object's many temporal pleats, the past sometimes acquires an explosive power to tear apart the present. In other instances, past matter is also allowed to assume a more dialogic relation to the present, suggesting affinity and proximity, rather than difference and distance, between elements of then and now. Taylor's song is clearly about the ways in which objects work temporally, the ways in which old objects, old emotions, old relationships, old selves can be brought back and made current, in ways both good and bad. When Taylor kills off the past versions of herself in Look What You Made Me Do, these versions of herself appear in the clothes that she wore in the music videos for her old songs or at memorable moments in her life. She implies in Reputation that she has molted like a snake, allowing these old selves to drop away forever. In fact, she's now returning to these eras as she re-records her back catalog, reinventing the look of each album. For example, creating a new photograph of herself for Fearless, Taylor's version, that alludes to her pose on the original cover of Fearless, but tints it sepia, as if it's an old photograph. Ironically, this is of course a much newer photograph, although Taylor herself is older. The sepia tint of the Fearless Taylor's Version album cover recalls the cover of 1989, which shows a Polaroid of Taylor's torso and half of her face. This cover art, too, even more explicitly than Fearless Taylor's Version, is intended to look like an old photograph. 1989, titled after Taylor's birth year, is an album about the passage of time, and Taylor's place within history, I guess. It's defined by the idea of vintage. In fact, in wine, a vintage is a year. The wines from a particular region and year share defining characteristics. This album argues that Taylor's birth year is important to who Taylor is, gives us some essential information about her. Taylor's portrait in the cover art to 1989 engages in a difficult negotiation with time, capturing Taylor in an attempt to recapture the now somewhat distant era in which she was born. Photographs bear great symbolic weight for Taylor, and All Too Well, the photo album on the counter, bears witness to her boyfriend's past. She says, "You used to be a little kid with glasses in a twin-sized bed." The photo album is a concrete metaphor for the past's continuation within the present. It bears witness to the boyfriend's past as a little kid with glasses, and it is one instance of the ways in which images from the past can recur to trouble the present, a theme of All Too Well. In fact, that's what the song's about. The past comes back to upset you, to remind you that things were not always this bad. "I know it's long gone," the speaker says, "and there was nothing else I could do, and I forget about you long enough to forget why I needed to. 'Cause there we are again in the middle of the night. We're dancing around the kitchen in the refrigerator light. Down the stairs, I was there. I remember it all too well." The speaker remembers the past all too well, feels marked by it, scarred by it. I suppose you could call this trauma. "Time won't fly," the speaker says. "It's like I'm paralyzed by it. I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. After plaid shirt days and nights when you made me your own, now you mail back my things and I walk home alone." The return of the things, marking the end of the relationship, is of course belied by the retaining of that one scarf that the ex can't get rid of, that's still in his drawer even now. The scarf stands for the memory of past love. As the speaker says, you can't get rid of it because you remember it all too well. But it also stands for the old self, the one you can't find but know must be somewhere. Maybe you left it at your ex's place. Like the photograph, the old abandoned item of clothing stands for the presence of memory, the way in which the past continues to lurk hidden inside the present. Unsurprisingly, photographs, and specifically Polaroids, serve both as objective correlatives of particular moments in relationships and as ways of thinking about how the present might look from the vantage of the future. In New Year's Day, the speaker describes candle wax and Polaroids on the hardwood floor, you and me from the night before. The song is about not wanting to know how a relationship will end, and even in the face of the memento mori of candle wax and old pictures, reminders of the fleeting nature of time, the speaker tells her lover not to read the last page, but tells him the spoiler. "I stay when you're lost and I'm scared and you're turning away." The Polaroid is an attempt to capture the present, to pin down a relationship that feels inherently millennial, grasping at a technology from the 80s to try to imbue the contemporary moment with a sort of timeless appeal, to make records of contemporary life look and feel like historical artifacts. Roland Barthes, whom you might remember from episode 1, wrote an entire book on photographs. He reflects on what is captured and what can't be captured in a photograph at length, and I'll read you a few sentences. Quote, "What is it that will be done away with, along with this photograph, which yellows, fades, and will someday be thrown out, if not by me, too superstitious for that, at least when I die? Not only life, this was alive, this posed live in front of the lens, but also sometimes, how to put it, love. In front of the only photograph in which I find my father and mother together, this couple who I know loved each other, I realize it is love as treasure, which is going to disappear forever. For once I am gone, no one will any longer be able to testify to this." In Taylor's New Year's Day, it's implied that the candle wax and Polaroids are part of the trash the couple clears away after their New Year's Eve party, reminders that the past is past and the future is unknown. What Polaroids say is essentially not very much. As Bart put it, they say only, "That has been." Or as Taylor might say, they say, "I was there." Absent the memory of what they represent and why they matter, they become only chunks of inert matter, objectives, without the emotional correlative. The theorist Bill Brown ends his very influential article Thing Theory with a discussion of a sculpture of a typewriter eraser by Claes Oldenburg in Washington, D.C. A typewriter eraser is what it sounds like, an eraser for typewriters, an item unrecognizable to most people who come across this sculpture. Contemplating that and the ways in which this sculpture plays with temporality, Brown writes, quote, "You could say that today's children were born too late to understand this memorial to another mode of writing, or you could say that Oldenburg cleverly recreated the object too late for it to be generally understood. It is an object that helps to dramatize a basic disjunction, a human condition in which things inevitably seem too late, belated, in fact." Brown wrote this in 2000 at a time of technological expansion and utopianism, but we all know what came next. The nostalgic turn back to typewriters and record players. Taylor, as a millennial writer and a writer about millennial angst and nostalgia, attests to the ways in which the past of fashion, of technology, keep bubbling into the present. But her work also reinscribes the traces of the past, the vintage tea, the Polaroid, into a metaphor for the attempt to hold on to your own past, to lost youth, to lost love, to your lost self, all of those things you keep in a drawer because you remember them all too well. Thanks for listening to Studies in Taylor Swift. You can email me with comments or suggestions at studiesintaylorswift, all one word, all lowercase, at gmail.com. You're listening to Happy Strumming by Audionautix.